First, obviously, Waco in the news once again for the wrong reasons. That's part of your congressional district. Wondered if you have any thoughts on the shooting that took place.
Well, you know, it was a tragedy that this occurred in what's normally a quiet Central Texas town. And I've talked with the police chief, I've talked with the mayor, I've talked with the county judge up there, and we don't have all the final details yet, but it looks like most of these folks came from out of town. And the reason is, if you look at the economic triangle of Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Waco is right in the middle of it, pretty much like Bryan College Station is. And so it looked like it was a convenient place for these bikers to gather and have a so-called meeting to discuss turf and Texas, and a fight broke out. Four of the folks were killed inside the restaurant, which means they killed each other, and then five were killed outside the restaurant, and it's still up in the air as to were they killed because of police action or did they kill each other. The good news is that no innocent bystanders were hurt. I mean, you have to applaud our first responders for, A, being on top of this, and, B, being able to handle it in such a way where no innocent civilians got hurt in this thing. So I was impressed by how it came out. I mean, it's a tragedy that it happened, but I was impressed by the way our first responders were able to deal with it.
Sure.
And so Gina and I had just been up there the night before at the convention center for a big gala for a charity hospital. And the next day, showing how the convention center up there is a multi-use facility. The next day, they were using it to sort of segregate all these folks so they could process them in the jail.
Let's have a look at things that are going on as far as Congress is concerned. What are you going to be voting on, some key votes this week?
Well, and over the past 2 days, we've done a couple of things. One is the highway trust fund funding was going to expire, not run out of money, but expire in a few days. And so we've extended that through the end of July, and that gives Congress a chance to work on a longer-term transportation bill. We're currently operating under a two-year transportation bill. And so what we're hoping to do is come up with something that goes somewhere between 5 to 8 years, along with a funding model to take care of the nation's infrastructure. I think we're going to come up with a solution. I can't guarantee it, but it does seem like Congress is willing to work on a bipartisan basis to get something done over the long term, which is what our states need in order to be able to plan longer term. Now, if it were up to me, I would turn all this back to states in total, but I'm just one vote out of 535 folks up here.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to talk right now because, of course, the Amtrak crash causes us to think about infrastructure, and that's not necessarily what we're talking about here. But at some point, based on the percentage of our gross domestic product that we actually spend in infrastructure, we're well behind lots of countries in the world. What do we do about that?
Well, that's a couple of things. Number one is, let's talk about Amtrak for a minute. There is no amount of extra funding that's going to change the laws of physics when the engineer drives a train at 106 miles an hour through a 50-mile-an-hour curve. You can throw another $100 billion at Amtrak. That's not going to fix that kind of behavior. This was an experienced engineer. He'd done this for a long time, so no amount of extra training is going to help. The Democrats called for extra funding because it's just absurd. I think we need to do, number one is, I think we need to look at pushing as much of this back to the states. The whole infrastructure has begun to decay at a more rapid rate as the federal government began to get more and more involved in the road construction. Now, as we push this back to the states, and we've done some test projects in Texas and California, and we're seeing great results from that, I think we need to do it nationwide. Second thing is, we need to look at a new funding model for infrastructure. And I think it needs to be based on the concept of user pays. So along with one other feature I'll talk about in a minute. But in terms of user pays, I think that the mass transit systems ought to be self-funded. So there's no reason for our gasoline taxes to be used to be funding a mass transit system in Houston or Amtrak or anything else like that. I think those systems need to be self-supporting. And there's no reason for the federal taxpayer to have to fund those. The same thing with the roads and highways. If somebody's got an electric car, they need to be paying for the use of the road. Today, they're not. So we're going to have to think outside the box and come up with a new way to do that. And again, I think by pushing it back to states, we'll get a lot more efficient use of dollars. Now, in terms of other funding models, one of the things I've been trying to promote is as we develop a 21st century energy solution for this country, I think what we need to have expanded access to federal lands and offshore for energy activity, whether it's oil and gas or coal or renewables or anything else. And the incremental revenues from that ought to be put into an endowment, pretty much like Texas funds, you know, our two tier one institutions. And that the funding that goes into that endowment would be used to fund infrastructure, basic research, and education. And that way you can get, with the latter two of those, with the last one of those, you can get the Democrats to participate in this process. Basic research, I think, is hugely important to what the economy looks like 20 years down the road. And then, of course, infrastructure, you need part of that to build the roads and bridges. I think that's a way to help provide supplemental funding for the infrastructure in this country. I know it's a long-winded answer, but I think that's where we need to go over the course of the near term, so we'll have a long-term solution.
Bill Floor is joining us this morning. We've talked about this a little bit before, but still want to get your thoughts again on Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal, fast-tracking that. Is this, short answer, is this good or bad for us and as Texans and as Americans, in your view?
Well, the short answer is it's good for America, and the even more emphatic answer is it's great for Texans since we are a huge exporting state. A lot of what we produce in this state is exported for international consumption. Look, I'm a free trader, and the bulk of the constituents that we have in this district are free traders. They know that we're better off when we have free and fair international trade. Now, the issue is some people have mistaken the notion that the TPA, or the Trade Promotion Authority, gives the president more power in terms of how to deal with trade, and that's just false. What it does is it's restrictive in terms of what the president can or can't do. It's not expansive of his powers. And so a lot of people say, well, I don't trust the president. I don't want to give him any more power. Well, that's an argument for the TPA or Trade Promotion Authority, because what it does is it puts the president in a box in terms of what he can and can't do. And I'm wholeheartedly behind TPA and also TPP, which is a Trans-Pacific Partnership. Mm-hmm. Now, there are certain things that we need to make sure it meets agreements, and TPA helps do that.
Bill Floor is joining us from D.C. Finally today, I was shocked. I found myself agreeing with Dianne Feinstein on Sunday. Well, I know. but what she said is that the ISIS raid on Friday was exactly, to paraphrase, exactly the kind of operations we need to have if we're not going to put troops on the ground. I kind of have to agree with that. What do you do to empower these special operations forces to be able to attack ISIS in maybe non-traditional ways, in your view?
Well, I have to agree with you and also with Senator Feinstein. These are the types of things that we should be doing, is using our special operators to deal with these threats. The president, I'm glad the president did this, because up until now, or up until recently, he sort of dilly-dallied around about that. I think this is what we've got to do. And I guarantee you, if I were the folks at the Islamic State, I'd be looking over my shoulder every day now, wondering when the U.S. special operators are going to show up.
Good.
But now we've got to understand there are risks to this. This is not a risk-free operation. Our special operators are the best in the world, and they did a great job when they did this raid. But there will be a time when we have casualties, and hopefully it's not something where we wind up stranding all of them behind enemy lines. We just got to know that when you're going to war with somebody, it's not a risk-free enterprise.
True, but I was pleased to see her say that, and hopefully that makes us feel a little better.
Oh, me too. Yeah, me too.
Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. We thank you for the time today.
Great talking to you, Scott, and I guess the events in Waco should remind us that we need to pray for our first responders, because when they leave the house every morning, they don't know if they're coming back.
So. That's for sure. All right, thanks for the time again.